of the Airport Funding Task Force. We do not have a quorum right now, but we will not be able to take any official action. So we won't be able to approve minutes, but I guess we could start with our presentation. And then under item three, the discussion of possible hiring of a consultant, that's where I really want to focus today. I think we've all kind of had our ideas back and forth, and Representative Dill and I will go over some issues that we thought in terms of a request for a proposal. And I think if we fine-tune the goals and the outcomes we're looking for, I think we can fashion a request for proposals or qualifications to be able to send out and see who we might be able to have respond to that in terms of coming up with a qualified consultant. So if Mr. Manson is here from the Department of Revenue, we will, I guess that's what we'll start doing and hope we get a quorum. We only had one person call and say they couldn't do this morning, so...
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm Jack Manson with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And with me is Randy Sanford from our research division. We've got four different handouts. The first one is on the aviation fuel tax. And we kind of just did some analysis. So Randy will go through each one of these, but just kind of how much we would have to raise that tax to kind of raise about $5 million approximately. And then you can ratchet that up or down. But and then we'll talk a little bit about some national comparison, how we compare on the fuel tax. And then we are going to try and give you some information on the sales and use tax that would be generated on aircraft and parts. So with that, I think there's the handout going around. Looks like everyone kind of has it. So Randy can kind of walk through that analysis if you'd like to get started on that, Mr. Chairman.
That'd be great. Thank you, Mr. Manson. And I'm sorry, Randy?
Sanford. Tax Research Division of the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Go ahead, Mr. Sanford.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members of the task force. We put together just some general information here. It's the first question was if you were to change the fuels tax to generate approximately $5 million more, I mean, there'd be a lot of different possible configurations for doing that. But I just took a sort of simple and direct one. It's sort of important to understand that the effective tax rate here in Minnesota is about 0.8 cents. It's less than a penny. The refund mechanism sort of hides the fact that it's what I would refer to as a two-tier system with commercial aviation paying, for the most part, very close to a half a cent on jet fuel, and general aviation probably more often paying closer to the 5 cents amount. And so you want that effective tax rate of something under a penny. If you were to change the rate to 2 cents, just sort of across the board, you could generate the amounts shown on that first page. Let's see. So if we skip forward, there are a lot of states tax differently. I don't have that handout. Like 21 states have a percentage-based tax. It's based on a price. And 25 states have a specific amount per gallon, or somewhat specific like ourselves. But many states will have some level of exemption for the airlines. And so looking at this, you have to sort of consider what the tax structure is that you want on the airlines and what the tax structure is that you would want on general aviation. In our case, we've melded it together, but there's a wide range of possibilities out there, and you can look at all the different possibilities that other states have enacted. Generating the additional $5 million to $5 to $6 million, maybe $7 million, to replace the registration tax or the property tax, it's seemingly relatively doable. There might be concern about whether or not consumption would be reduced. That is to say, if Northwest purchases about 70% of the gas, of the fuel consumed in the state, and that's about 300 million gallons per year. If you change the rate, is it possible that they'd start purchasing elsewhere? They have hubs. I'll speak to Northwest for the moment, but I mean, you may want to consider Delta or United for that matter. I don't know. but Northwest has hubs in Detroit, or so Michigan and Memphis and Tennessee. The tax rates there that they would pay are quite a lot higher. So I suspect that they're fueling as many of their planes here as possible. You know, I I'm not an industry analyst, but I assume that they look to maximize, you know, individuals do it on a state level basis if the tax is a lot lower in Minnesota than Wisconsin. You know, gas tax, you probably purchase your gas here. I suspect they're doing the same thing. Raising the level to 2 cents, I don't think would cause a significant, at least I wasn't able to determine that it would cause a significant change in consumption level. So there's no factor for a consumption level change. That's, you know, just, if you'd like to, you know, just go through all of them and then we'll take questions after. Maybe we'll do that. So that,
well, Representative Dill had a question right now.
Sure.
Going through this.
Well, I think I heard, thank you very much. I think that I heard some of the information. How much would, jet fuel and avgas is used by general aviation and non-air carrier versus air carrier in the state as a percentage? Is it 60, 40, 70, 30?
The non-jet fuel portion is very small. I'm getting this information from our petroleum division, just to be clear about it. And you know, I put together a calculator, a spreadsheet calculator. But their information was that it was, let's see here. General aviation gasoline was considerably less than 5%.
Does that, Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
does that include the jet fuel used in general aviation?
If you were to include, I'm not sure what the portion is. I think it's small. My understanding is that it's small based on conversations with folks in our petroleum division. But yes, but if you include a jet fuel, it would still be under 5%.
So, Mr. Chairman, the air carriers in the state are using 95% of the aviation fuel that is used in Minnesota. Is that what you said?
Yes, and I think it's notably higher than that. I think that previously the Department of Transportation Aeronautics reported it to be 99%. In a handout that they provided to the task force previously.
Bill,
Ms. Smith, do you have any information on that?
In terms of our proportionate share, I don't. I could kind of back into our gallons, of course, and let you know what Northwest gallons
are. I'm familiar, Mr. Chairman, how many gallons that is. It doesn't seem to me that. We just heard you say that it was 95% to 99% a range, and that anywhere from 1% to 5% is used by all the other aircraft being flown around in Minnesota. That doesn't. I think I need to. For me to understand this, I need to have that narrowed down a little bit more than even in that. What I mean by air carrier is a 121 air carrier, an airline like, you know, Northwest, Delta, United, Mesaba, Pinnacle, Compass. I mean, there's a substantial list. And then all the rest of the aircraft are considered general aviation, even though they might be a commercial air charter. There's kind of two ways I'm trying to separate that. Is that, Representative Beard, does that make sense to you?
Perfect.
And the reason that I'm asking that is, you know, it's been suggested to me, and only suggested to me, that we raise the gas tax to 10 cents a gallon, 10 cents, and leave the existing rate structure the way it is. So we would, if you did that, and I'm only saying that was suggested to me, you would tag Northwest for 5 cents a gallon for the first day of their pumping at the airport. You would get all the other aircraft that are flying in Minnesota, including air carrier who are lesser amounts, until they go down through that graduation and raise some additional funds that way. Now, who knows if the governor would ever even consider a tax increase, but that was one thing that was suggested to me. And I know that at my local airport, when I fueled my airplane yesterday, I paid $5.10 a gallon for 100 octane. And that was, I mean, another 5 cents a gallon to meet some of the goals and that I think are going to be emerging from this group. Seems a pretty reasonable cost to me. Maybe it doesn't seem very reasonable to someone else. But I flew my airplane 105 hours last year. I used 1,300 gallons of fuel at a nickel a gallon, and I flew 105 hours of use is a pretty small is a pretty big amount compared to I mean the average. I don't even know what the average is for general aviation. One of you people could probably tell me.
Representative Dale, it's probably around 50 hours.
So I did double as much. And, I mean, I'm looking at 1,200 gallons of fuel, or maybe a little more than that, 1,300 gallons of fuel at a nickel a gallon. I hate tax increases, too, but it's just something I think we have to put on the table. And in that scenario, I don't think the pain be pretty easy to figure 250,000 nickels to Northwest. Just an idea. It was just given to me. I'm just bringing it out. And so that's the reason I was interested in knowing, Mr. Chairman, what the difference is, the gallons used by air carrier versus the gallons used by general aviation.
I might add, too, that the petroleum tax is a public tax, and so we can get a very specific list of all of the, and I have it. I mean, I would defer to the petroleum division to provide you know, a list with, you know, appropriately titled, you know, with year and information. But, yeah, you can look down there, and you know, Northwest $315 million, Pinnacle $14 million, Minnesota Airlines $12 million, Delta $9 million, Federal Express $9 million, American Airlines $8 million, and you get out of the millions very quickly, and it's a I think your point is well taken, is that general aviation contributes. You know, that we probably are really talking about a tax on airline fuel, and how you would distinguish. I noticed one of the ways that it was distinguished was Arizona has a tax on, they capped it, they have a tax on the first 10 million gallons only. So, you know, there are all kinds of possible strategies to consider, you know, various interests.
I think all these are good ways to go with what we're discussion going to do a little bit later. And I just mentioned to Representative Dill, one of the ways we might be able to even ferret out some of that information is in terms of what FBOs are pumping fuel and mow the FBO records. We would almost know who, based on who's pumping the fuel, as to where the bulk of that fuel is going as well. Maybe that's easier in terms of revenue to ferret the information out that way. I don't know.
One follow-up on that, Mr. Chairman. I recognize that what I said a moment ago is only for discussion purposes. I'm not proposing that. And I also realize that there are airlines in Minnesota, 121 carriers, that would pay more than, for example, Northwest might, because they don't go through that graduated tax refund reductions as quickly as Northwest, which is apparently gets through it in the first day. If you use 342 million gallons of fuel, you know, million gallons a day, one day you're out of it. So other airlines would probably pay a little more as they drop down through that, and some might even pay the full 10 cents, because I remember there was some airlines that took on a small amount of fuel, and some might not fuel here because of that. You know, they might, but I could tell you that having been in the business, tankering jet fuel is not a profitable thing. So, you know, carrying it around so you can get somewhere else isn't that good of an idea, unless you need it.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sanford, you were reading some numbers just a moment ago about what FedEx burned and what Northwest burned and so on. Are those numbers available to us?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a sheet with it on it. Yeah,
there is here?
We had it last meeting.
Oh, last meeting. I'm sorry. I was out of town.
Yeah, it might be in the packet.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. And we can certainly follow up to the extent that you have additional questions. Okay, the next thing is we took some information that Representative Beard had provided from the state tax guide for general aviation by Conklin and Decker. And the question is, you know, if you're going to move that rate, you know, where are we now and, you know, where would you potentially go to? And the Conklin and Decker is really focuses on general aviation, but they do have jet fuel information. And so I put together something that's just an initial effort. I think that you can look at these things in multiple ways. I think you could probably, it's important to note that some states exempt, you know, airlines at some level, or give them some reduced. You can look on the list and kind of see what's happening there. There was some discussion about potentially indexing the rate in Minnesota. You know, I'm not sure how valuable that would be in Minnesota, because in Minnesota the airline industry, the fuel consumption is really based on these two big factors. One, Northwest, and whether or not they're growing or expanding, and two, the general economy. And so for 12 years, the fuels taxes stayed between $3 and $4 million. It's averaged about $3.5 million. It really hasn't moved very much, because it hasn't been a flourishing time for the airlines. On the other hand, some states I think don't have as much of a problem because they had a percentage-based tax, and so rather than focusing on gallons consumed, they focus on price. That's something to be considered, I guess. Other items on that on that list, the list really should be redone and done based on effective tax rates, which would take some time to do, but can be done. The easiest thing to get jet fuel consumption by state, you know, I think that Energy Information Administration will have that, and then the tax collected, so that you can kind of see where other states are, you know, sort of directly. And at that level, I'm expecting that we would be relatively low at that, and with our effective tax rate of something under a penny a gallon. Certainly, there are some states out there with a percentage-based rate. It would be much more than that.
Representative Dill.
Well, something else I think I heard you say, and correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not trying to pin you down. I'm trying to go through what you're saying in my mind.
Sure.
If you look at the airport that our family is involved with, and you talk about general aviation, and then you talk about air carrier, and then you talk about jet fuel, you've said that several times. I think that in order to get the good information that this group needs, we need to have it separated again, air carrier versus general aviation. General aviation is 100 octane and jet fuel. Now, let me give you the reason why. A few days ago, Robert Redford came into our airport with a Gulfstream 5, and they put 3,800 gallons of jet fuel on it, and he left. Dianne Feinstein came in with a Challenger and put on 2,800 gallons. Those are all general aviation flights, but they're using jet fuel. Now, then five airplanes came in I'm just picking that number. And they took on 25 gallons apiece average in 100 octane. So you see what I'm trying to get at is air carrier versus general aviation, but yet I've heard you routinely refer to airline consumption, general aviation consumption, and then jet fuel consumption. And I think for us to get our arms around this, we need to know what general aviation is consuming, but jet fuel, I mean, we stand outside and pray for a Gulfstream. I mean, that's how you make a living, I mean, to be truthful. And it helps, you know, I mean, we want everybody, obviously. I was using that as a joke. But that it's really important that we get that kind of segregation in the information. Or the 100 octane, the jet fuel and generator, those two items, and then air carrier. But somehow so we know the difference between air carrier and general aviation very distinctly.
I think we actually had a couple questions.
Okay.
Representative Dill?
Mm-hmm.
This may be helpful. This is using the Department of Revenue information that they presented to us at the first meeting. And if you look at the aviation fuel tax revenue for fiscal year 2005, you've got the overall fuel tax revenue of $3.8 million. So I'm not looking at consumption. I'm looking at dollars.
Yeah.
And you've got commercial airlines that are funding three-fourths of that currently. So that it gives you a size in terms of a revenue commercial aviation funding three-fourths already of the fuel tax portion that's funding the public airports, and you've got one-fourth coming from other sources.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, to try and figure that out, then we'd have to interpolate into the discount rate that you may be paying 75% of the bill, but I'm trying to figure out the fuel flowage.
Which is a different way of looking at it.
Right.
If someone wants to look at the revenue flowing in, that looks like it's a proportionate share, at least in 05.
As we're going through all this, and we're talking about a consultant towards the end, I'd kind of like everybody to think about it this way. What I've been hearing, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, is that one of our major goals is more funding for aviation, but that we have more emplanements as we improve our airports. So if that's our end game and we have some strategies to get there, some of these things in terms of more money should work themselves out by getting more planes here. So we've got to kind of keep the overall view of the combination of things we need to do that. So sometimes I think I'm just saying that to the effect that I think we might be getting overly sidetracked here. Not that we shouldn't focus a lot of attention here, but as we can see, it's a number of different columns. So we've got to spend as much time on everything, and I don't want to make sure that we're all just trying to move one issue at a time. I think we got to make sure we're constantly having that 10,000-foot view of all the columns at once. And Mr. Workman, did you still have something you were?
No, Chairman. Northwest pointed out the same thing I was going to point out. Is that we provided that information, but I don't know if it covers all commercial.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't include commercial aviation. Also has substantial dollars going into the cleanup fee and the inspection fees of, you know, several million dollars.
Is Northwest trying to insinuate that commercial aviation pays a big chunk already and doesn't want to pay more?
Facts.
Just wanted to know where that was going. Okay. You know, again, I've kind of looking at all the columns, so I think it's to me, as we're looking at the summary in terms of state sales tax, aircraft registration, personal property, and then fuel tax, especially on registration fees and personal property tax, it's really not of any benefit to me, and I don't know about the rest of the committee, to just have a yes or no. Because if we don't know the range, and I have that in my notes for a little bit later on to really discuss, but who are our competitors? I mean, why aren't the emplanements here? Who are our competitors? And while it's valuable to look at all 50 states, from the commercial aspect, I think we need to know is you know, where are the major hub and spoke operations? And we want to make sure that we're always competitive there, especially potentially in the light of a merger. You know, my opinion there is Richard Anderson's a smart guy that loves the deal, and he will get something. I don't know who he'll get, but he'll get something. So we need to maintain the competitiveness there in terms of our average retail customers. But again, I'm gonna move forward with another idea as we're thinking about this too, because from a legislative standpoint, I think when we're looking at the big picture, and we sometimes don't connect the dots. So you guys can kind of help me here, but when we say, for example, that we want to be a major player in terms of science and biotechnology, and if we're really attracting and putting the dollars to having a biotech corridor, a lot of the biotech industry today is out there in agriculture, in water quality, and other issues that do not exist in a place where the hub-and-spoke operations can get people to. So if we create that corridor, we need to simultaneously be thinking about which airports are we going to expand, how are we going to attract the businesses there that use aviation, because they're getting out to middle America where they're putting their research on the ground. So it's I think that, and I think we've got a good group of people here that does that, but I think that's kind of our focus, is we've got to have an overall vision that works with what Minnesota says we want to do, the kind of people we want to attract, and those people do, in fact, use aviation. So the big picture is, who are our competitors? What are they paying in other states on every one of these columns? And how do we attract more employments here in the overall scheme of things without having our revenues go down? And then the natural assumption would be the more planes, the more revenue automatically. Not to say we can't look at increasing some things, because I think we need to do that. Does that make sense? Or have I gotten everybody way off track now?
Well, I heard one. You talked about the goals. I want to make sure that part of the goal that we don't lose focus of is that there's people in the room that want to buy down the cost of registration.
Yes.
And so, you stated we had a couple of goals. I just want to make sure.
Yes. Well, and that is on my my list, my goal list as well. And my contention is, when you study the what's the name of those reports again that I've been reading through, the one you mentioned, the
Conklin.
Yep. When you study that, even when you look at the summary here of states without having a lot of the details. So this is just my contention. When I go to my accountant in terms of business, my accountant will look at certain line items and say, it would be cheaper to do business in another state. And I think from an accounting standpoint, just that registration fee is enough that an accountant starts going, if you put your plane in Wisconsin, if you put your plane in Arkansas, it's much cheaper in terms of registration. But accountants don't qualify the rest of the CEO saying, if we added these eight columns together, it's actually cheaper to operate in Minnesota. So they're looking at something that we have a major cost in, and they're not looking at the overall thing. So I think that's part of our problem in looking non-competitive in Minnesota, but I think in point of fact, we probably are competitive, and some of it might be just shifting some of the columns around, as the MBAA said, buying it down in a different way. I think that's a good strategy, because I think accountants, again, go to the biggest column and say, it's not competitive here. They're not looking at the overall cost picture. So that's where we've been looking at, but we need to know, even in these terms of summaries, is, again, the two potentially biggest things, aircraft registration and personal property, all we have is a yes or no answer there. That doesn't do me any good. So then I got to go back to Conklin. It would be very helpful for all of us to have something in hand that we've got the columns there and we kind of know but then we don't even have to have all 50 states again. We can go, who are our competitors? We need to know what is, that's part of defining the goal to get the consultant, and maybe that's not one of your goals. That's one of my goals, I think, of the committee. We've got to know who are we competing against and how are we getting there in the end. So, yes, all that's valuable, Representative Dill. I didn't mean to. Yes.
Mr. Manson, have you, has the department done any thinking about how to collect from fractional owners?
Mr. Chairman, maybe Mr. Heck could come down and speak to that a little bit. You're talking about the sales tax or the registration tax?
Both.
If Mr. Heck could join me, that would be helpful.
Mr. Chairman, members of the task force, my name is Greg Heck, and I'm with the Department of Revenue. We have made some sales tax audits on the ownership of fractional interests in aircraft. I'm aware of three audits in the last year or so. Two of those went to appeals, and I think they have been resolved. The one's now in the process. We've also issued a revenue notice in 2005 stating our position that fractional ownership interests in aircraft are taxable in Minnesota, and we are pursuing those lines now in audits.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Heck, are you taxing the fraction? For instance, if you've got a $10 million jet with 10 owners and one of them is Minnesota, how would you pursue that that collection?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Beard, we are taxing just the fractional interest owned by the Minnesota individual or company that owns that fractional interest. Mm-hmm. Virtually all those planes are based or hangered outside of Minnesota, so we're only taxing the fractional interest of the Minnesota owner.
And again, Mr. Chairman, are we taxing that on a Minnesota-based rate then, 6.5%, and calling it use tax?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we are.
How about, I'm sorry, I didn't want to cut you off.
Yeah, we are collecting it as a use tax at our Minnesota rate of 6.5%.
Okay. The registration fee then, if the registration fee on the aircraft is paid in another state, how are we handling it in Minnesota, the Minnesota portion?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Reed, I have no knowledge of how that is being handled currently.
Well, it's important for us to recognize that, that what we're doing is we're pursuing the use tax portion at a Minnesota rate for a Minnesota domiciled corporation then, or person, whoever, whether it's a corporation or an individual that owns that fraction. That's helpful to know.
Mr. Chairman, you noticed there were he listed three that he's pursuing. The money that's collected from those, is that going to the State Aviation Fund or elsewhere?
Mr. Chairman, that is going to the general fund. That's general fund sales tax.
I'm glad, Mr. Chair, that Representative Lancheski isn't in the room because you could just raise the hair on her back. But I get your point. Well,
thank you, Brad.
Mr. Chairman, what is there any strategy that the this is to Mr. Manson? Is there any strategy that you are evaluating on the registration portion for collecting at the department? These are on fractionals. I'm on fractionals.
Mr. Chairman, the registration tax is actually collected by the Department of Transportation, so I don't know if they have anything they'd like to add on that.
Mr. Workman.
Chairman and Representative Dill, at this point, we don't have a handle on how that would be done, so we're not pursuing it at this point.
Mr. Chairman, do we have any idea what the magnitude is of that problem?
Currently, I don't have any idea what the magnitude is. I'd have to go back and check.
Does anybody in our group have an idea what the magnitude of that problem is?
Well, if you
large.
Large.
Sure. Representative Beard.
First of all, I don't know if I'd hesitate to call it a problem. I think it's a situation we need to resolve. But part of what one of the reasons I brought this legislation forward was get back to the theory of supply side economics. When you lower the cost of something, people tend to do more of it. And registering airplanes and paying sales tax is one thing that we have to be cognizant of how it impacts what happens in this state. High registration fees, it was felt and mentioned to me by several people, are incentivizing people either not to buy airplanes or not to buy them here and base them here, which causes us lost fuel sales, lost rent, and lost employment for people who take care of those airplanes. So I think we're looking at a delicate balancing act here. And to call registration fees or airplanes that are registered elsewhere a problem for our state, I would think we should think of it more in terms of a lost opportunity or an opportunity that we may be unintentionally incentivizing to stay away. And I don't mean to nitpick over the choice of the word here, but just so you know where I'm thinking on that. But I do have a question concerning sales tax collection for Mr. Heck, again, that might be helpful as we think about how we tax our citizens and how we either incentivize them or disincentivize them in this state, if I can proceed with that. Mr. Heck, when we're collecting sales and use tax, just in general tax theory, if I buy a piece of equipment in another state and pay sales tax on it and then move it to Minnesota, I've already paid sales tax. Don't we have a reciprocity kind of a thing about that?
Yes, we have a credit for taxes that are legally paid in another state. What we've found out, or at least what I've found out is in the audits I've been involved in, that tax has not been paid in any other state. We've always asked the taxpayer to get some documentation from the franchisor of these types of arrangements. And in the three audits I'm aware of, the tax was not paid even in the destination state where the aircraft is currently hangared. And we've encouraged the taxpayer to contact the franchisor to get information. Mm-hmm. And they have not been willing to give me any information because I don't think they want to establish any nexus with Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So they don't want to get involved with Minnesota taxes, so they leave the fractional interest owner to struggle on their own.
Well, the reason I ask, Mr. Chairman, is thinking of one particular company that's based in, I think it's Ohio, where they struck a special deal with the Revenue Department of the legislature there on registration fees and sales tax. And I know for a fact the state of West Virginia, I believe, in response, has either eliminated sales tax on new aircraft or dropped it to a number like 1% or something like that. And I'm wondering if someone bought an airplane and based it or a fractional there and showed they indeed had paid the legal sales tax of a small number, would we allow that to apply to Minnesota, or how do we think about that? Do you follow my question?
I do follow your question. I'm aware of the legislative treatment in Ohio. We would give a credit, though, based upon the rate of tax applied in the state where the aircraft was acquired. If they'd actually paid at a 4% rate in Minnesota and our rate is 6.5% Minnesota, we would pick up the additional 2.5% on Minnesota use tax.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Do you still have something?
No, he just gave the information.
Okay.
Back on the fractional ownership piece, and being able to track fractional ownerships that are coming back in and out. Could somebody remind the group about who gets the registration tax? It's like so many landings are so much percentage of time in the state of Minnesota. And then I have a follow-up kind of on that. And Gary, I'm not sure if you have that handy, but who's supposed to get hit, whether it's a fractional person or just an individual owner?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Workman,
in the statutes, it talks about non-resident, non-commercial operators who operate more than 60 days a year. The issue is how do you monitor and collect it? So they are subject to that if they're operating in the state 60 days.
Mr.
Killian.
Then when we were kind of focusing in on fractional only there, which is a difficult piece, but the same rule applies for anybody, an individual. So I'm kind of getting right down to the crux of the problem is just policing, whether it's an individual or the fractional, and if there was a way to police that. There's some pretty sophisticated radar equipment and things out there, and that means auditing and lots of tough policing actions that aren't very fun, but there is probably some way that you could get at that if you wanted to continue to collect registration fee and use that as being the way that you're going to collect it, because I don't think that those airplanes are going to quit flying here. If they're coming in here more than 60 days, we need to track it and send the fractional guys a bill, just like we do with other taxes.
Mr. Chairman, and I don't know how far down this road we want to go, but relating to the 60-day rule, I know the state of Maine has dropped off of a lot of pilots' Christmas card lists because they're pursuing anybody who makes an appearance in their fair state, and if you do it more than 60 times a year, you're getting a bill. And I'm thinking about what these tools are. These machines they're time machines. They travel. They carry people all over the place. And I'm thinking of particularly one friend of mine who flies for a local banking company. And, golly, in the first 3 months of the year, he's probably in 8 states more than 60 times. Do we want all of those people taxing the daylights out of this banking company just because their plane shows up in Lincoln, 12 times in March or something? That may be beyond the scope of this discussion today, but I want us to carry that thought in the back of our mind. Because I'm trying to push a particular philosophy that says, if you tax it, you disincentivize it. Now we need taxes to make airports, to keep the lights on and the radar working and all the good things that happen. We all agree on that. But I think what we're looking for here in the big picture is, where's the balance that allows us to be competitive and not disincentivize people to commit aviation in this state, whether it's ownership or actually flying here or buying their gas here. And just for my friend from Northwest, that theory applies also to fuel tax, that we don't want people flying past Minnesota and tankering their fuel out of Michigan or something just because you buy 99% of the fuel. Just that's on the table, too, for discussion. Whatever we do here, somebody's going to benefit from, and hopefully it'll be supply-side benefits, more airplanes here and more aviation happening. And we don't want to do it, though, by balancing it on the back of people who may not necessarily benefit from what we're trying to do. But I want to think about that 60-day rule. That was the point of that whole discussion, that may be unintentionally creating pockets of mischief for the revenuers to go after that they're not really intending. So, Jack, don't be looking for more work right now. Okay?
Did you have something?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Beard brings up a good point, and we're trying to make the system effective. But the 60-day rule is there for a reason. There's a cost to us to maintaining that system and making it effective. And those aircraft, which are fractional ownership for the most part, that are going to, violates the wrong word, but incur that 60-day rule, are heavy users of our system when you think about what we're investing in. Or the state's investing in NavAid or runways of that. They're the users of that. So, and right now, they're not paying for that use. And, you know, that's another dirty word almost, use tax. But there is a user fee. Mm-hmm. So to say we shouldn't look at that or to negate that, it's kind of the counter to what the representative said. We shouldn't do that either. We should look at that 60-day rule and see if it is valid.
Well, I think that's a good point. And one of the issues that you're seeing come to the forefront, especially starting down in Florida and some of the other states, is the air taxi business.
Yes.
If it catches on, and as it catches on,
yes,
we need to be looking at that. We need to be looking at users paying for the system that they're using. And I don't know how we're going to get our arms around that, but it is a delicate balance, like Representative Beard said. And I think that's a part of the discussion. We need to make sure it's competitive. We need to bring more users into it, continue Minnesota's rich aviation history and having one of the best aviation infrastructures, but also generate more to keep those airports functioning and actually improving. Do we have other questions for revenue?
Well, I think that what's going to happen is Mr. Manson's going to be sitting at his desk watching FlightAware the rest of his life. He'll be typing in N numbers on the computer on FlightAware. That's a tracking system that you can get on the Internet for free.
It's not our educational time for revenue, I don't think, yet.
I really think we have our work cut out for us. And I'm not, right now, as I sit here and listen to all this, I'm not sure that I see any clear picture or path to get there, because we've got, I mean, we have, an item before us today that talks about improving the safety and reliability as one of the items that we discussed here in the committee that Mr. Strage's brought forward with some estimates of cost. Those costs are significant, and we have, other interests that want to buy down the cost of registration to incentify. And Representative Beard sounds like Ronald Reagan now with the supply side economic. But we have that, and then we have, we have a lot of competing needs. And I guess it's the magic of the legislature that always figures out how to balance them improperly.
Well, that's the key, is I think we want to, Representative Dill, actually do something inside the purview of the legislature that does work and does have foresight and vision, and actually I've been reading a number of books on legislators lately, and that is the main complaint in terms of studies of legislators, is that we're always responding to crises, and we operate more out of the realm of response than vision. And so that's why I like us to take a bigger view, and quite honestly, Representative Dill, you kind of hit what happened at the federal level with the whole FAA funding debate. They went round and round and round and kind of came back full circle and said, well, with a few minor modifications, basically what we have works, and without upsetting the apple cart. I hope we can, even if it takes a lengthier amount of time, we have to move things out, that we're doing it right, and we're thinking with that long-term vision, saying, it's not working the way we vision it today. We need to fine-tune so we keep our stable base what we have today and move forward with more money. But the whole game is to bring more planes here, again, to really rebuild or make Minnesota a significant player again in the aviation industry. We have a long, long history of being the top aviation infrastructure in the country. We have a rich, rich aviation history that no other state in the United States has, and that's the base from which I come from to say I want to see us always be one of the major players, everything from general aviation to commercial. So I have that vision that way. Once again, anything else from revenue? Oh, Mr. Manson?
Mr. Chairman, before we leave the table, and since Representative Lancheski is not here, you want us to talk about the sales and use tax on aircraft and parts? I think you have revenue analysis in front of you. You could do that quickly, and then we'll just talk about some of the difficulties in really coming up, as you can see.
Sorry, Mr. Manson, I wasn't trying to kick you out right away.
Usually I like leaving the table, but we'll continue.
Thank you. Go ahead.
This might information from DOT or Aeronautics might help a little bit on that fractional ownership issue. At some point you have to understand how many planes are sighted here. I think the amount is about 5,000. Yeah, you have to understand the number of planes that are being sold annually. I think it's about, and this is information from DOT Aeronautics databases. I think it's about 400 planes, and with an average value of about $400,000. Now, that fractional ownership issue, I suppose that if we took all of the registration data from all of the states and were able to determine where planes are sited, how we ranked relatively, that might be a useful undertaking. Now, quickly to this last item, the sales and use tax on non-commercial aircraft. The piece that we do know is the aircraft sales tax. The sales tax is being collected on aircraft by the Department of Transportation at Aeronautics, and those numbers are there. There are three primary ways for sales tax on aircraft to be remitted. If you haven't already paid it, if you go to DOT to register, you're going to have to pay the sales tax. Alternatively, it's appearing on a sales tax return. And I am involved in the process of reviewing those returns. There are about 800,000 returns received annually, and trying to find those that are reporting airplane sales and or use tax is a difficult undertaking. The best information we have is the information we have from DOT Aeronautics, and if we know that 400 aircraft are being approximately 400 aircraft are being sold or rather registered for the first time in Minnesota annually, and that the average value of those planes is $400,000, you might get a sense that that number might approach $10 million. I cannot verify that. I'm concerned that there are numbers that have there are some planes that would be exempt. There are some planes that would be receiving credits as having paid sales tax in other states. There's a variety of reasons that full amount wouldn't be collected in any given year. But the real number is, somewhere between 3 and 10 is sort of our initial stab at it. That's probably not very useful to you. The thing that if we were to think about dedicating the sales tax, it may be necessary to sort of create a mechanism to have all the sales tax flow through one channel so that we can measure it. At this point, it's at best difficult to measure.
So, Mr. Sanford, are you trying to tell us that revenue in the state of Minnesota doesn't have the latest, greatest computer systems, that they can't just call up a keyword and find what we're looking for?
We have pretty good systems. But
not that good.
Yeah. There are a lot of products. Unfortunately, airplanes are mixed with all the other products that are being sold at retail in the state of Minnesota, and it's a lot. Now, we get those questions, and we sometimes have, sort of magic resources that we can we go to a national resource and try to pull it down to Minnesota, or we can go to some survey level information and grow it up. But this is such a specific industry that it would probably entail, you know, a specific survey level and some very specific level of industry analysis.
Mr. Chairman, the difficulty is when on the sales tax return, it's not broken down by type of product you're selling, and that's just to keep it the filing system simpler for the retailers. But so that we have these problems with other areas too, where the retailers selling multiple types of products, and we just don't have that breakdown. So,
well, Mr. Manson, you know, something on that would, you know, it makes more sense to me, and maybe it takes a legislative action, but if the state were a business, which obviously it's not, since all that money collected doesn't go into different columns and goes into a big black hole called the general fund, if you were a business, you would want to know where the collections are coming from so you could tell if your revenue is going up or down in a certain area, so you'd know the stable sources of your revenue. So maybe there's a bill in there, and I'd be happy to help you draft that if that would be necessary. But I think as the legislature talks about our economics and what's going up and what's going down, that would be very helpful for the whole conversation in the future of Minnesota, is knowing you know, what products are being sold and taxed in Minnesota and what aren't, and what's growing and what's not. Again, helps us in the long-term vision of almost every item we work on as legislators in terms of attracting businesses and a stable workforce. Mr. Sanford.
Just the number of products. In this case, the simple thing would be to have all sales tax paid at the same time as registration at DOT Aeronautics, or alternately where systems are improving. We have the same problem with vehicles at DPS. When you register your vehicle and pay the sales tax, they are our agents, and they keep, you know, sort of minimal information. And so if you go to DPS and you ask how many vehicles were purchased in the state last year, a seemingly simple number, they say that they wouldn't be able to tell you because they don't maintain. Now, they have some legacy systems, but it's a similar problem. It's, yeah. There are these larger items that we really would like to track, but the systems haven't been designed to. Your point is well taken.
Well, I'm also on state government budget and bonding. A lot of these issues do seem that we talk about tracking stuff, and so if there's some way we can help you in terms of legislatively, if that's what you need, I don't know. Is that, Mr. Manson, do you need legislative authority to create a tracking mechanism? Automobiles would be another great thing in terms of talking about our transportation infrastructure. I'm also on transportation, obviously. Mm. If we knew how many cars are bought, sold, transferred, all these things are helpful. So, well, Mr. Chairman, other things, but we got to keep on track to this. But it just seems like, in terms of collecting that much money on a single item.
Well, Mr. Chairman, being a member of the DFL party, I want to keep business as simple as possible and keep people from having to report so much information and causing them undue burdens and excess taxes and things like that. And you're starting to sound like our side of the aisle now instead of the side of the aisle you're on. But I just had to bring that up and as a enlightenment here.
Well, thank you, Representative Dill. But being the conservative that I am, I do think that if I'm paying money for my car, it ought to stay with roads, and if I'm paying money for my airplane, it ought to stay at the airports and not go into the big black hole of the universe in order to fund somebody else's favorite legacy program. So I can bring it back to my conservative nature. Thank you. All right. Were we done with the sales and use? Any questions for our revenue people?
Yeah, I do. Mr. Chairman.
Representative
Beard. Before they leave the DOS there, I just have the witness stand. I have just a couple questions. On the sales and use tax thing, Mr. Manson or Mr. Sanford, either one, the number in parentheses, 2.9, 3 million, 3.1, those are estimates of based on registration numbers of what you think might be going into the general fund.
No, those are known.
Those are the known numbers?
Those are the amounts that are being paid by persons that are appearing at the Department of Transportation Aeronautics to pay the registration tax and have not paid the sales tax, and they're paying it at that point. the Department of Aeronautics Division keeps very specific track of the money that they receive at their location.
Then the $10 million number that we just kind of guesstimated at here at the bottom of the page, is that an annual number? And does that include everything else that happens that aeronautics doesn't know about, or people that register their airplanes have already paid the sales tax?
Chairman, first I should return to the previous. There's an important caveat to that in that the sale of airplanes is pretty volatile. That number, there's quite a bit of variability of that number. The $10 million is still based on information from the Department of Transportation Aeronautics Division. What they have provided to us is information from their database of approximately 5,000 planes, and they were able to identify those that were registered for the first time in Minnesota within 1 year. And so, yes, it is an annual number.
It is, okay. Dealing with the aviation fuel tax on the first sheet you handed us here. Mm-hmm. State Airport Fund, you've got 08, 09, 10, so on. What's that first line of numbers I'm looking at there? Is that if we raise the tax a nickel, or what is there an assumption there? Explain to me exactly what I'm looking at.
Oh, sure. It's the bolded piece in the body of the text. The rate would, if you were to, the question was what, you know, was to provide an example of a change that would generate approximately $5 million, if I understood the request correctly.
So if we did 2 cents a gallon just for everybody, for everything they bought, those would be the numbers.
That's right.
Understood. Okay.
But, you know, the point, I guess the point there is there'd be
no graduate.
Unlimited opportunity to create,
oh, yeah,
you know, alternatives.
Oh, yeah.
But your, Mr. Sanford, your basic point there in the highlighted part was the effective rate would need to be about 2 cents. You talked about the effective rate today is 0.8, approximately.
Yeah, the line in the paragraph prior does say that the effective tax rate is, you know, 0.78, okay, something less,
yep,
than a penny. But in this case, I am just, as Representative Beard pointed out, I'm just calculating what it would be if it's a 2 cent flat rate with no refund.
With
graduation.
Right.
Okay. Anything else? If not, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
For members, we do have a quorum. They're in and out for a couple other committee meetings, so they gave their input. They'll be returning if we're here long enough, but we'll go back to item one to approve the minutes of December 19, 2007 meeting. Representative Dill moves the minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes. Minutes are approved from the December 19th meeting. Item three, discussion possible hiring of a consultant.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dill.
Is that in the packet? Did that get... That is... I've been working with... members of this group just to get together a draft of an outline of some of the qualifications that that we think that should be considered when looking at hiring a consultant. And so I didn't want to make the group feel like I went behind them, but I thought we need to get off the dime on this and have something for the meeting. So this document is just either an ending point or a starting point, however you want to look at it, and give you a few moments to look it over, and then discuss it. And I was working with Mr. Strege a bit on this, so Ray, if you could give us just a brief overview of how you came up with some of these points.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, this is based on somewhat of a standard request for qualifications used for airport consulting services put together by the FAA, the Minnesota Aeronautics, and a consultant several years ago. And what for this particular situation, what we I think need to focus on is the how the various states, and not only at the state level, but at the county and local levels, collect and support the state funding of their airports and aviation system, the total system. There, from what we know, there won't be a lot of firms that have the qualifications that specialize in this type of service. So rather than making it very a very difficult process or time-consuming process, what we have suggested in here that going to the last page or last comment, a detailed proposal is not required at this time, and that the LCC and the task force may select a firm based just directly on the statement of qualifications. If there's not an obvious best firm, then you'd probably want to go to detailed proposal and interviews, but maybe through just the submittal of the qualifications of the various firms, you'll be able to see one that ranks above, significantly above the others.
Okay, can you come up from the coordinating commission? I got some questions.
If you could introduce yourself for the group, please.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Dill.
Mr. Hubinger, if this is obviously not a document that came from the Legislative Coordinating Commission, if we were to embark on this, you would be doing the hiring of the consultant, is that correct? We don't have the power to hire the consultant. How is that going to work? Just tell us how it's going to work.
Mr. Chair and members, our usual process following the statute that governs the LCC would be to make this available to the public in one of two ways, either to publish the notice of this contract in the state register or to make the proposal available to all known qualified firms. And I don't know this part of the world, and if the folks in this group are aware of all those firms, we could simply distribute the proposal to them. If we were to publish in the state register, that is published weekly, the first date that would be available with their publication deadlines would be January 28th. Traditionally, we would receive the proposals and perhaps do a first screen reviewing of them, but the decision would normally be made by this group or by the chairs, depending on how you want to handle that.
Chairman, President Deal.
So then going back to this draft, have you reviewed the draft?
Mr. Chair, I have reviewed it. I think it substantively covers most of the items that you would want it to have included. I'd suggest that if for expediting the process, you might include and require the firm submitting proposals to indicate what their rates or charges would be to do the work and some estimate of the amount of time that they would need.
Okay, so rate and estimate. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then if we approved this, where I'm trying to understand is would you want this, if we did some modification as you suggested, maybe others as we discuss this here, would you, we would approve this and then you would take it, or do you need approval from us of this and then you take it and go forward with the process?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Now you might want to hang tight there for a minute while we talk this over.
Thanks, Mr. Hubinger. Well, members, I have read it. I got an advanced copy of it, and I had just made my notes, and I think in terms of again, kind of talking about the end game, it doesn't show up or doesn't need to show up in the qualifications and, you know, requests for proposals from people. But I think we need that as we're interviewing people and talking about you know, if you read into some of these questions, you know, what are the who are our major competitors is what I have on the goals. What are the costs in their state? What amenities do they offer? What do we need at our airports to attract business? You get at some of those within the points on Representative Dill's request for qualifications here. But I think we need to kind of fine-tune what the outcome of that report is, because I think how we move ahead is in the summary, and knowing the hardcore details with that map and a lot bigger spreadsheet than what we've seen is how we get there. So, Representative Beard?
Mr. Chairman, looking at number D, the ability to provide the necessary information before February 15th is caught my eye. Yep. In the notes under other business, one of the things I want to discuss was the timeline we're working with and just whether we're willing to meet 3 and 4 days a week for the next couple weeks to get this work done. And the scope of the work we have to do is not just what we'd originally envisioned. How do we balance registration fees and fuel tax to have a what I originally envisioned was a revenue neutral change that would incentivize people to come home, thereby growing the business through supply side, yada, yada, yada. This has gone a lot further than that, and February 15th is looming quickly. Do we want to have a separate discussion, or when do we want to talk about whether how we continue this thing, when we continue it, and if we should continue it?
Representative Beard, I think that's a question for Mr. Hubinger. You've been involved with several other groups that are up against those deadlines. What do we face there?
Mr. Chair, members, that I know of, none of the other working groups are going to be able to complete their work on time. This is one group where the legislation isn't clear about or doesn't specify a time frame. What drives this working group is the resolution that was adopted by the LCC creating the group, which indicated February 15th. It would be helpful to go back to the LCC and request an extension, I believe, for if you want to do that to complete your work.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Dill.
Well, I serve on the Electric Energy Task Force, and we did just that very thing 2 days ago as we passed a resolution, Representative Beard, as you're aware, to extend. I mean, as I recall, it's an open-ended date at that point. And I had asked Mr. Hubinger to consider in the hallway when we talked about this very item to consider a resolution either for this meeting or for the next meeting to do exactly what you've addressed in this outline. As well, I have another question, Mr. Chairman, for Mr. Hubinger. Senator Youngbauer makes a good point as far as getting into the details of what we want to have. Now, that isn't something to have from the report. That isn't something that we'd have in this request for qualifications. That would be something that we'd have in a work plan that would be after we've figured out which consultant we want to have. That would be in the work plan that we would be working on from this point forward. Would that be kind of the way you would see that? I mean, you do this. You obviously have done this many times.
Mr. Chair, that would be one approach. It would be helpful for firms, I imagine, submitting proposals if it's clear in the request for qualifications about whether it's clear about what it is that you want them to do so they have a sense about what they need to submit.
And the other thing, Mr. Chair, in this, if you look at the part it says in the paragraph 4, I think it is, it talks about the comparison of taxes paid by both general aviation and airlines are needed for sampling of other states. I'm thinking, would it be possible for you at the airline, you're pretty in tune with that all over the country. I'm certain that you keep track of all of that. Would it be possible for you to accomplish some of that for this group and to make a report to us rather than hiring the consultant to do that? Or would that be would the group perceive that as some kind of a conflict? I wouldn't, because the information is information and factual. I guess I'm asking you to comment on that.
Representative Dill, I've had a conversation with a few other members of the committee about exactly that. They called asking that. It will, surprisingly, I mean, we have all the information. And I'm going to give a little flavor to the group to hopefully address your conflict issue.
Mm-hmm.
pulling that information together on property taxes, sales and use taxes, fuel taxes, fees, that information is really not known in whether it's the accounting firm community or the consulting community by industry. It's by tax type. And there is no real consulting firm that's going to have that information that they can pull together. So if we go out and try to find a consultant to do that, they're going to have to start from ground zero. You're going to find a law firm or an accounting firm, I would suggest, that's going to have to go through the statutes and look at all the specific aviation provisions. And even if you just focus on Minnesota, you're looking at a separate chapter on the air flight property tax, a separate chapter on, you know, aviation fuel taxes, and it is very, very specific, and it's probably going to be a junior person that's doing all the research. And so, but I'm trying to convey it's going to cost a lot of money, and it's probably not going to be fabulous quality, and it's going to take a lot of review. I also told people that Northwest is always looking for different revenue sources, so this That is a joke.
I didn't have that. I didn't have in there that we were paying anything.
If there's a certain amount of time, I mean, we've got various charts and we've got certain graphs. I need to pull it together, and it will take a substantial amount of time to pull it together and put it into, or this is what the statute says, and compare it to the statutes and, you know, the 8 to 10 hub states. But I think it is probably a more efficient manner, and it's going to be free. So I think we can do that. And if we want the Department of Revenue or someone to take a look at it, I think that would also deal with the conflict issue.
And that gets
but there's got to be some sort of a timeline that's not within the February 15th deadline, because there's lots going on.
So, members, I think our first point of action would be to request from the LCC an extension. But that was, again, members, why I went with kind of a goal and sketch out the end game based on, I think, Representative Dill and Mr. Strege did a good job with the draft. But, you know, item number one on my goal, once you knew where your end game was to identify the major competitors. And serving on a couple other commissions and task forces, you know, looking at the amount of data you would have to draw together, that was my key component, is in terms of if there's 8 or 10 hubs and you work on that for commercial, that's one thing. On general aviation, you have to know in terms of registration and availability of things who are our major competitors. We have to know, or kind of ferret that out to let the consultant start working on that. Now you're starting from square one, and that's going to be very expensive. So I think we part of our job is to look at some of the basics and say, here's where we think, get input from the aviation community at the table, who are our major competitors in terms of general aviation and the next step up being our business aviation people. But the more narrowly we can focus where that consultant goes, the quicker the report comes, the cheaper it is in terms of that. So we do need that focus, and if we can attach it, as Mr. Kubinger suggests, so that kind of the firm that would be looking at it would know kind of what we want in our summary and conclusions, maybe that gets us there that quicker, too.
Would we want to have a subset of this group get together and narrow this down even further?
Well, I'm kind of thinking based on our timeline today, and I will be out of town from January 24th to February 1st. So, you know, before we hit that hardcore legislative stuff, I have to get out of town with my family. I'd like to spend, and I don't have a great deal of time because I have other committees today, but kind of go over some of these ideas and say yay or nay on our goals. And then I think what the general consensus of the group should be when we walk away today is whether it's you and I, as co-chairs, I would like to see direction from the group to be able to work on it and refine it and maybe just email it out and get a final approval from everyone that this could be an attachment to our request so we can get that out ASAP. What's the input from members on that? Yes, no? Good idea. You guys are just not working with me today. Am I doing that badly?
Mr. Chairman,
as I'm sitting here listening to this whole discussion, I'm already locking in on one name of somebody who could accomplish a lot of tax and revenue analysis and build some sort of a Excel program or something pretty quickly that can mash the numbers one way or another as we make this up. Lower this, what happens here? Mm-hmm. Keep the graduated refund schedule the same, extend it a little bit, you know. I'm thinking of a person like that already. I don't know if we want to start throwing names out here, but I'm trying to balance what this is looking for, and I think Ms. Smith's comments were accurate, that if we ask them, if we take this into a law firm somewhere, this is going to be a $1 million proposal. What do we have, $200,000 to work with? However, if we bring on somebody who already is immersed in this stuff and ask them for things that we can work with, like a program where we can plug numbers in and sit here and bat things around, we might be able to get some. We might be able to get this done for 200. Certainly not by the 15th, but we might be able to get it done for that or less.
On the other point that's been bandied about a little bit here was whatever we can get from members to give to that consultant.
Yeah.
Saves that much time. They can input that, whatever Northwest can put together, MBAA, Mac, you have access to other information that could get us more in terms of the metro. Leaving our Northwest to do their other hubs. So if we divide out that and get that to a, give whatever information we can get to our revenue people, MnDOT people, the more information we can physically handle and put in that equation, again, that keeps the cost down and gives them a good base to start with.
I think the biggest benefit of a, Mr. Chairman, if I may, of having someone who understands the industry and kind of what we're up against vis-a-vis other states and the competition we're facing. Having that person help focus us is probably the biggest benefit, rather than sit here kind of wandering around on different ideas and different... we get the impression sometimes we're not really sure where we want to go, although we may. We're not conveying it well. This person can extract that from us, put it in black and white, and put a packet in front of us at the next meetings, following meetings, that I think will help make this much more concise and efficient. We've got a lot of horsepower sitting here from revenue, from transportation, and from other places that are at our beck and call, and I think it would be a much more efficient use of their high-powered time also to have someone to kind of extract from us what it is we're actually looking for and then let them execute it. Because you're right, we're going to run out of here at 12 o'clock right into the next Chinese fire drill, and you know, and then our passions and our thoughts are elsewhere.
Responding to crisis after crisis.
Yeah, so having someone that we actually put on the meter to help us focus that and actually accomplish this while we're off fighting other fires, I think is as valuable or more valuable than whether or not they have 30 years of experience beating up the state of Michigan over property taxes or something like that. You follow what I mean? So I'm ready to submit a name for that person already, but you tell me when you're ready to hear it.
Representative Lachance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just I apologize to everybody that I couldn't be here sooner.
She ought to be glad you weren't. We were talking about dedicating sales tax.
I was just going to ask Mr. Manson if he wanted to come up and give the recap.
I actually do want, if I might, before names are brought forward, and I don't have a name. I don't know enough to have a name. But maybe before that happens, if I could ask Mr. Manson a question, actually, about this idea of a process of collecting this data. And I apologize to Mr. Manson as well that I missed his presentation. And, you know, I should tell you the reason I missed this meeting is I had previous meetings set at that time with other legislators and their city councils who are looking at proposals in their districts, and I didn't feel that I could cancel on them. So it's not that I wanted to miss the revenue presentation, because that's one of the things I really wanted to hear. But now that we're on the consultant, won't go back to the presentation. My reaction to data collection on revenue history on anything is generally don't let the industries do it, and that's not with aviation, that's with everything, you know. And so I think there's merit to saying, look, we don't have that kind of time and money, so we might have to compromise a purely unbiased sort of statistical empirical approach to data collection. But then if that's the case and this group chooses to do that, we also have to recognize that, you know, it's a little more tainted than if you would have said, look, we're going to give the Department of Revenue 3 new employees, and they're going to go out and they're going to find everything perfectly, and they have 2 years to do it. You would just get a different pile of information, I think, and we don't have that kind of flexibility. The legislation doesn't let us do that. But, Mr. Manson, can you just tell me, for point of reference, to understand a little bit on the idea of using a consultant internally here with, you know, using some information from this group that they could generate, and a consultant who is in the aviation industry, I assume, is from Representative Beard's comments. If that wasn't the case and this group didn't have to look in that direction, what would the Department of Revenue do if you were tasked with, we would like you to find that information, you got a couple years to do it, to what extent would you have to go into the industry to collect the data set in the first place? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Lancheski, I think when I talked to our staff about the resolution, that we thought kind of a lot of the work has already been done in this area as far as some kind of other states' comparisons, and a lot of the information seems to kind of be available already. So we didn't really know how much more work really had to be done in this area, but when you get into you know, what's needed for funding, as far as costs, the future costs and that, I mean, that's out of our expertise. But some of the revenue sources and state other state comparisons, I think, are kind of available.
Okay.
I mean, my ears kind of perked up at the $200,000. I was kind of interested in that myself.
Yeah, I'm sure you were.
But,
Mr. Chairman, that probably would be a 25% raise for Mr.
So, Representative Chesky, I'm not sure exactly what you're asking, but I think, you know, I think we could pull together quite a bit of this information, I believe. And Mr. Sanford's still up there, who's from our research division. I don't know if he wants to add anything, but so I don't know. I mean, sometimes we hire a consultant, and then the department ends up doing a lot
doing
of
all
work
the
anyway.
Yes,
and,
that's
your
point.
And Mr. Chair, if I might, that's kind of where I'm going. That's what happens in the tax committee all the time. You know, we've got people out there doing things, and they come to Mr. Manson and get a bunch of stuff from him. So I actually think the 200 number is really high. I mean, I can't imagine it could cost that much, particularly if they're accessing information from the Department of Revenue. But maybe if the chair would permit it, maybe Mr. Sanford could join us, because certainly you'd like to keep as much a budget as you can for other things if possible.
Well, Representative, as our discussion went yesterday, I really appreciate your input. And so I will allow you to bring people back up to our witness table as it was described earlier.
I apologize. I just think if there's a lot available, as Mr. Manson's saying, it might help just get a consultant to fill the holes that we don't have.
Sure. I've been doing a little bit of work on this, Chairman and Representative Lancheski, and from the fuels tax perspective, from the individual tax type perspective, there's a fair amount of information. Understanding what the questions are, once we were able to, you know, determine what the questions are, I think we can provide, you know, some direction and some, you know, comparative chart information. The Department of Transportation Aeronautics Division has all of the registration tax information on the 5,000 airplanes. The value of an outside source would be that this is sort of a closely held industry, and that person would have a strong industry perspective. I'm not sure that Northwest can't give that to us. They've sort of volunteered to do that, and when I heard that, I was thinking, you know, that's a lot of what we need is, you know, some of the stuff that Northwest had offered. And but dedicating the sales tax, there are just some limitations. And even the if we were to hire someone, there would still be holes. And I agree that oftentimes what happens is if you hire someone, that they come to us and or DOT Aeronautics in this case, and we'll gather all the information, and then we'll recast it and put it in a sort of a nice, you know, into a nice, you know, into a much less garbled state than the information that we provide to you sort of piecemeal.
Thank you for your indulgence, Mr.
Representative Lancheski. As Representative Dill and I were just talking, really it's and you guys can jump in, members. We almost need, and Representative Beard touched on it, is more of a modeling program where we can type the stuff in and put some different scenarios out there and come out with what are the effects of those scenarios, and then vision our end game of how do we attract more aviation interest to Minnesota. So it wouldn't be necessarily we have access to a lot of the data we need, but it's how do you put it into something that's a program that we can punch in some variables and see how we compare to other people and change in some of the columns around like we talked about to make it more attractive. So I don't know where that leaves us necessarily. But
Mr. Chairman, I think that is something that's of interest. It seems to be emerging to me is this idea of modeling. I mean, we want to increase the amount of money in the state airports fund. We want to be able to incentivize people registering their aircraft in Minnesota, thus operating them in Minnesota. We don't want to hurt the airlines. We need to be able to take the inputs that are apparently already known but need to be kind of gathered together into a central location and then say, if we raise the tax this much and we lower the registration this much, what does it do to the airline? What does it do? How does it affect, a modeling type scenario? Because, I mean, right now I sense that nobody at the table has done that. You know, everybody's kind of sitting around looking at each other. And, at a business, you would be cause and effect. I mean, a cause happens and you do an analysis on the effect. And in the tax committee, we do that all the time. You know, what is, if someone proposes they're always proposing to get a tax reduction. Isn't that right? Not always. Sometimes the sales tax, we would love to talk about that. Anyway, that's all right. It seems to me that from this conversation that's kind of the direction that we could get together that information that everybody seems to have, but we don't have it all in front of us, and then start to say, this group wants to do, this is their goal, and have somebody start putting that, quashing those numbers together.
Well, and Representative Dill, just thinking out loud, and again, members, I'm a person that likes activity, so even if you just nod your head once in a while, let me know you're with me. And Mr. Hubinger, I don't know, I'm thinking out loud if we talked to maybe even like the University of Minnesota Center for Transportation Studies, if they would have, maybe we need to tie in academia on putting together a modeling program, but it kind of comes out with a visioning for a long-term issues in the whole state of Minnesota, so maybe thinking outside the box that way, because I think if we could create that kind of a scenario modeling, it gives us more insights. Are you familiar with anything University of Minnesota does? Have we looked and had any work like that done from any of our colleges and universities?
Our office has not been involved in any consulting projects with the university recently. I mean, we're certainly aware of the Center for Transportation Studies and could contact them to see if they'd be interested in working with the task force.
Representative Lonchesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, here in the discussion, and Representative Beard, you missed a little bit of it. I know we all are in and out. But we kind of got off on, how much money do you need to spend to buy what you already have, and heard a little bit from the Department of Revenue that much of the data they have. So I was trying to make the point that I didn't think we should, use the $200 on something that the department can get, because often a consultant will come to the department and ask for the data and then come back and make a nice PowerPoint, And the chairs were stating that, they're looking for some modeling, get the data and then model some effects given some different changes. And the chair had mentioned, that he thought maybe that the chairs could kind of figure out the nuances of this. And I think, hearing more from the experts here that are on the table, which I'm the person who's not, I am perfectly comfortable with the two chairs determining, what Representative Beard said, what I said, and kind of the Department of Revenue here to come up with a plan. I think it isn't best to have the group try to decide exactly what you're looking for. I'm perfectly comfortable with accepting or voting for your motion if it's just, you two are going to hone this thing and kind of figure it all out, what you've sort of laid out here. And, beyond that, I just didn't want to see us spend a lot of money on resources we already have and take it a little further and then just get some modeling probably makes some good sense.
And Representative Beard, the name that you mentioned that you didn't mention?
Yep.
Are they capable of putting the modeling program together? Is it consulting with Sermain?
Yeah, we could probably hire them by the hour, Mr. Chair, and furthermore, because they have national, this is what they do for a living on a national basis, I think the modeling, what they could probably do in their sleep for us. It would be an easy thing. But back to my other point, as we're kind of trying to congeal, get something to congeal out of this discussion, I think almost as someone who can help focus the discussion and facilitate, could be a facilitator for what we're trying to do here, there would be some value in that. I think it would be a fraction of the $200,000 we have to work with, but we should probably call them first and ask them what they think. Don't let me set the price.
Well, and it's a good point, Representative Beard. On another group I'm with, we actually went through the hiring process. We hired, we had a lot of our goals and things, but then once we, in fact, part of the interview process was talking about how the organization would focus us in to keep the price down. Mm-hmm. You know, make sure that going into it we had the outcomes well in mind. We talked about that in terms of
here from the others.
Go ahead, Mr.
Real quick, we all just listened that we can save money on the consultant because we have data here. Remember that there's a whole part of that that won't be so forthcoming with the data, and that's the other states that we want to model this against. Consultant's going to have to dig that out, and so there is a cost there, and I think that will be equal to any cost on our side. So it's not as inexpensive as we might have just first thought. That's a big cost to the consultant side. I think Representative Beard is right about a consultant's focus, because there is a whole range of data. But I wanted to point out that let's not lose sight of that other cost.
Anybody else? Mr. Spady.
Mr. Chair, I have had the experience of talking with, I don't want to mention a specific firm here, but that firm is mentioned right at the top of the handout that the Department of Revenue provided. And in talking with that representative, that person could be our facilitator that does the steering, and there may be another firm or two out there, but this is an extremely specialized field, and as Representative Beard said, hey, we just start out at an hourly rate to get us through the first few steps, and that would be the formulation of the work plan for this. And I think that would be money very well spent, and it would be would be just a nominal amount out of that $200,000.
Mr. Chair, I believe the Minnesota Business Aviation Association members have aircraft in different states, too. So some of the companies have aircraft based in other states that they could research. And, of course, the National Business Aviation Association is also able to help us come up with numbers to as far as operating business aircraft in the general aviation theater.
All right, we're going to try to move as quick as possible now. We're coming up against noon. As I see it, I want to go back to first, and Mr. Hubinger, do we need a just a motion to put something back to request an extension to the LCC, move that February 15th date? How would we?
Mr. Chair, I think that would be helpful.
I'll move it.
Representative Beard moves that this task force requests an extension of our time frame from the LCC. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Opposed? Done. Motion passes. Anything else in terms of a formal? Okay. We talked about a resolution earlier.
That was the resolution that we were discussing. Was just... He'll come forward with something at the next meeting that we'll adopt.
Okay. So that'll be that.
Right, Mr. Hubinger, you'll come forward with something?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dill, what the motion just adopted might be sufficient unless you want to provide greater specificity to the LCC about the length of the extension
that you need.
The motion will be sufficient.
Okay.
I wanted to satisfy you.
All right. The next thing, as I see it, is as we're looking at a consultant, and I think it's helpful to put names out there because I want to make sure that whatever format we put this out to the public, that we make sure those names, any names, so anybody that's got names right now would be, I'll say the floor is open to put some names out there to make sure that we get them on our list, and Mr. Hubinger, make sure our request goes out to those names. So did you want to start, Representative Beard?
Chairman, yes, I strongly suggest we contact Nell Stubbs at Conklin and Decker and request that she make herself available at some hourly rate, or make an hourly rate known to us, if indeed she'd even come up here at this time of year to work with us. So.
Is that what your thought was, Mr. Strege?
Yes. Yes,
sir. Any other thoughts in terms of names? Okay. Then I guess in terms of fine-tuning this, if it's the wish of the committee, I'd look for a motion that would allow Representative Dill and I to fine-tune this and work with Mr. Hubinger to put the request for proposals out. The motion has been made by Representative Lencheski to allow Representative Dill and myself to work on fine-tuning this with Mr. Hubinger. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? You can oppose that. Motion carries.
I'm trying to get out of it now. Thank you.
All right. Okay, I wanted to actually kind of go down this and work on this in terms of this goal list that I have that's not in front of you. I want to go on it one by one and see if there's any objections to it. The end game, as I was looking at it, was more employment in Minnesota, and I kind of put it as Minnesota becoming a business aviation connection that matches up with our overall strategy. Anybody have any problems with that or additions to that we can work towards? All right.
Here, I have, just to clarify what that last sentence means, that our what?
Well, the business aviation connection, as I explained it earlier, and Representative Lencheski, you weren't here, if we decide that we want to be a bioscience corridor or other things that align with the legislature, the intent of our universities, we would vision that as being part of marketing strategies in terms of new business aviation employments, is to say, if we're going to attract these people, we want to also let them know our aviation infrastructure also supports the needs of that business. So I'm trying to align that with the vision of other things the legislature does in Minnesota.
Understood.
Okay. The second one I had was to identify our major competitors. Additions to that? Okay.
Competitors as in states we base airplanes?
States that we base airplanes,
okay.
Yes.
Understood.
Okay. And my next one after that is what are the actual costs in their state? So that kind of goes along with it. The third one I had was the amenities they offer, because I think in some sense we need to go beyond just the actual costs. We need to know at least the 10,000-foot view of the amenities that are available in their aviation infrastructure. Any additions or thoughts on that? All right. My fourth one I had here was what do we need our airports to attract business? So that kind of goes with what amenities the other states might offer, but also beyond that to say, I mean, we can kind of fashion it with our overall vision statement for the state, but we want to get input, and I think that part will kind of come back to the committee as a whole as well, all the members to input there.
Chairman, is that the area where you should talk, or we should talk about incorporating the emerging technologies that are coming to be?
Exactly.
The ADS-B type systems and stuff that are coming on the horizon?
I will make a note of emerging technologies so that we can. All right. Anything else that we would want to make a note on that? Go ahead.
Senators and Representative, isn't there an underlying tone of tax fairness in all this that some of us think that maybe there's a group flying into the state of Minnesota that aren't paying their fair share and there's a balance that needs to be found between sales and fuel tax and use tax on all this, and doesn't that need to be looked at?
Well, that actually is would be under my next one. I have in terms of the next one, just in generality for actual ownership, user fees, how do we look at policing that? I think that needs to be part of the discussion, and I don't know how that factors in because how do you get the statistics? And I'm working on some other issues on general transportation where there's a lot of vehicles out on the road people don't aren't even aware of that are unlicensed and run off-road fuel, and yet they run up and down the highways all day. This is kind of the same scenario. Since they're unlicensed, you don't know how many there are in the state until you require them to be licensed, and we're kind of up against that same thing. So I do have that on the list. So I think we're covered there. Anything else that you'd want to put on that is to try to get our arms around?
Well, I do think specifically, Mr. Chairman, that tax fairness is an issue that needs to
we'll put it under.
Be specifically addressed.
Okay.
As we reach the end, you know, as one of the primary goals.
And anything that you don't think was covered here, feel free to shoot an email to myself or Representative Dill as we go through this fine-tuning, but we're going to try to get it done hopefully before I go out of town the 24th. End of next week.
Senator Youngbauer, may I add to the tax fairness piece? Because I think what we need in order to analyze that is we need to look at general aviation and what taxes and fees they pay in the competitive states that we identify, and then commercial aviation and what taxes and fees they pay in the competitive states.
Mm-hmm. I think that was part of the overall discussion because even though we'd classify them differently, we do not want to be unfair for Northwest or whatever they might call themselves in the near future. but as well to be competitive on all aspects. The goal of this task force, as I understand it, is all of aviation. And if we raise the level on one end to support the level on another end, it doesn't make any sense because we're still not getting to our end game of more emplanements and more aviation infrastructure and being a pillar of aviation.
Mr. Chairman, I think to her, to Northwest comment, our resolution that we gave you at the beginning listed those two particular things, the study of the 12 states for general and the study for the commercial and the airline, broken out that way for that purpose.
So yep, I believe I have that in my file here.
I believe that's what
you have. Mr. Workman, you had something to add to? Okay.
Can I just add, one of our nonpartisan House staff members pointed out to me, and I just want to make sure we get it on the tape and on the record, that our intention in determining what the competition is between general aviation and commercial aviation, as we look at all these states and all the taxes and fees, is let's not forget the federal funding component, because we certainly need to know, if we leave that out, it will distort the data. Mm-hmm. So if we can just make sure that we get that when the consultant does whatever they're going to do, and the federal funding is part of the equation.
And Representative Lincheski, that was part of the discussion earlier as well, that we need to bring that into the picture because a lot – we actually talked about that. The FAA funding debate at the federal level went round and round and round. They really came right back to almost saying they need to do the same things we talked about as scenario modeling and using the same situations they had, but changing a few of the numbers to move forward for now. And the final item I had was just that we make sure we're talking about scenario modeling so we can go back and forth and plug in numbers, and we can all discuss that in the end of if we raise this, how does it affect this? If we lower that, how does it affect everything? So that's what I have on my list. Anything else anybody sees other than our discussion as well that we did today? I just wanted to go over that as long as because you didn't have it in writing in front of you.
Senator Youngbauer, I have two things to add, and I maybe they're subsumed in your list, but I think the consultant also needs to look, specifically item C, how other states fund airports.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we have that in the list currently. Here we know it's air flight property tax, fuel tax, or a portion of it, and other, and I think we have to look in other states, the competitive states, what's happening there. The other piece, along the lines of if federal funding is being looked at, we want to look at uses. What are these funds being used for? Are they being used for which aircrafts and for that type of?
I actually have a whole list of questions I had on uses and things, and as we're heading up against noon, that's a good point. But my intention with what I just went over was to utilize what Representative Dill and Mr. Strege came up with here and then kind of add, fill in the gaps, and then part of what we just discussed was more of the summary we're expecting out of the end work.
Mm-hmm. My concern is the Conklin and Dedecker seems very, very They know a lot about aviation. I'm not sure commercial aviation is their focus. Mm-hmm. The Department of Revenue also is fabulous at gathering information. I think they're the best source to help gather all this information, but they don't have a lot of the other pieces that the Department of Transportation or some of the other tax types that airlines pay or fees that airlines pay to compare. So I'm struggling with how I can help.
Well, if it does help you, I didn't mention it, but it's down here in my footnotes about the major hub rates and charges. So it's, and Mr. Van Leeuwen talked about it. Did somebody else talk about air carriers, didn't they? Representative Deal. So I think we've, again, what we've talked about will
be a combination.
Will all kind of be a combination.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Well, just to clarify, I assume you as the chairs are going to have Department of Transportation and Department of Revenue and the consultant and everybody meet together a few times, and everybody who's got something to throw in the pot, there'll be some sort of bringing together and, geez, what are we missing? And then consultant moving on? Or
what I'm envisioning right now, and Mr. Hubinger can tell us if this is, I guess what we were looking for in the motion was that Representative Dill and I could fine-tune what goes out. Okay. We get proposals and we kind of interview people. I was hoping that the whole group would be able to interview people, that we'd all be able to put questions back and forth and fine-tune that. Hopefully the next meeting would then be basically 100% towards that interview time. And really letting whoever's up there tell us how we can focus it in, keep the cost down, and meet our goals and anticipation. How do you vision that, Representative Dill?
My guess is that the whole thing will boil down to the firm we've already talked about. And that,
most likely. But we still need to put it, I believe we still need to put it out there to the...
That's a question I have. You want to comment on that? Can we just... I'm going back to my old city administrator days. For consulting and professional services, we didn't have to, at least at that level, we didn't have to do any kind of requests for proposals for, like, legal services or that kind of thing. Legal accounting, for example, we just hired the person we felt was qualified.
Mr. Chair and members, the statute that covers the legislature generally requires that contracts for professional services be made available to interested parties that are qualified. The comments here indicate that this is a fairly small world, and so there would be few firms. Our general process is to publish in the state register, but we don't need to do that if there's an understanding that there isn't a large number of firms that are available. I would suggest that we make it available to at least the Conklin and Decker firm, and perhaps to the University of Minnesota for the Center for Transportation Studies, just to have a second possible source. Mm-hmm. And if there are other firms that members are aware of, we could certainly forward the proposal to them.
So we can get through this rather quickly.
Mr. Chair, I think we can move fairly quickly, yes.
Okay.
Further questions? Did you want to go through this item, Representative Deal?
I wanted before you is a document for improving the safety. One of our goals was safety and reliability of this committee. And so, Ray, would you go through this sheet? Ray took it upon himself to kind of try and come up with some rough information on the reliability and safety for intermediate system airports. So could you explain this sheet to us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, what we were seeing here is a need for information in three areas that maybe no one entity or organization has. That was the taxes for general aviation in the various states, taxes for the air carriers, and looking at the safety, reliability, and land use compatibility, unmet needs, and emerging needs. Like I said, there's no one group that does this. This is something that was done in conjunction with the Minnesota Council of Airports and also Minnesota Business Aviation Association about a year ago, and we dropped out part of the scenario and put boxes in there. For an intermediate system airport, which is an airport that has a paved runway but less than 5,000 feet long. All of those have an access limitation to the air transportation system of at least a mile visibility in order to land at that airport. And it's for business use, that is not adequate reliability. I've made this comment many times that if we closed down our streets and roads every time that the visibility was below a mile, the public would not stand for that. But yet those using the air transportation system with more expensive vehicles than the ground transportation, they are expected to be willing to live with these serious constraints on the reliability. So basically the minimum requirements for a precision approach, which would allow the visibilities to drop to a half mile using the emerging newly available GPS technology. They say you have to have a runway of 4,200 feet by 100 feet, and on the back side of the sheet, the order of magnitude cost of that is about $8 million. It would also requires greater separation between runway, taxiway, building area, all that type of thing, so that takes all that into account. These days, the environmental assessment and mitigation is becoming a very large item, and we have a figure for that cost in there. Land acquisition, as Representative Dill gave an example at the last meeting, this also accounts for the difference in the length of the runway and the what's called the runway protection zones. The non-precision versus the precision approaches require more land. Identify that right up front. There has to be different lighting, navigation lights, all that type of thing. So order of magnitude cost for this for an airport, on the average, we're recommending using about $10 million. And by order of magnitude, I mean it's closer to $10 million than it is to $0 than it is to $20 million. So we start at that point, and then from a policy perspective, come up with a decision for that first box of how many airports need to be upgraded. Then it's a matter of multiplying that number times the $10 million. Another policy decision, combination policy decision and some historical information as far as what the federal, state, and local funding is for these types of projects, throw that number in there. And then the third thing is what would be the implementation period, how many years, and that's just at that point a mathematical exercise. I don't think we need a consultant to look at the cost of the need side.
Good. Thank you. Questions? All right, Mr. Chairman, just a quick question for Mr. Strege, who is a consultant and who's sort of given us this. Thank you very much. You can get a deduction somewhere for the contribution. The 83 intermediate airports you're talking about, how many of them have instrument approaches now, or is this 83 additional airports in Minnesota that could stand this kind of an upgrade?
Those are 83, Mr. Chair, Representative Beard. There are currently, and I've talked to the aeronautics office and I've gotten different numbers, but ranges between 80 and 85 is the numbers I've got from them. All of them, to my knowledge, well, first of all, they are all paved runways, less than 5,000 feet in length, and they all have non-precision instrument approaches. Oh. So there's horizontal guidance to the airport, no vertical glide slope guidance to the runway, and the visibility minimums are at least a mile or greater.
So this would be to upgrade, Mr. Chair, non-precision approaches to precision approaches. This is about what we're looking at for airport to do that. All right, thanks. That helps.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, the 83 on there is, and this was our discussion Friday, is the total number that's out there today. That is not necessarily the number that needs to be upgraded. It will be some number lesser or up to that number. That has to be determined. That's why we don't give you the numbers below that, but we show you the magnitude of what's out there, and that's why that's done that way.
Okay. Anyone else? Any other business? If not, we're adjourned. Thank you. A whole lot of money. A GPS is fun. You know, I have one DOR. What was
that lady?
I have one DOR. So
what
is
it?
So what I do letter from you guys. No more money. Generated that letter. That's where it came.
I can email it
for
you.
I had called him
Great. And then you don't have to bring it every time.
I bring it back 2 days after.